Hello and welcome to.
That was not me. That is perfect timing.
My dog literally just barked randomly.
We're keeping it.
I am so sorry.
It's staying in. That could have. And the funny thing is, the folks, of course, at home didn't hear Andrew's countdown. But because Andrew counted down to recording, it was like 3, 2, 1. Like right on cue. It was perfect. I think your dog was listening. Anyway, we're here for some bonus pod on hashtag Free Britney. I'm all in. I want a Free Britney. And of course, joining us is, well, first I'll say, how are you doing, Andrew Torres?
I am fantastic. Very, very excited to cover a subject that I know nothing about. So,
well, what are you doing here? Boot him off the call. No,
all right.
Just kidding.
Well, then.
You're not, you don't love Britney enough to be here, Andrew.
Morgan and I would
like you to leave. Anyway, Morgan, welcome to the show again. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I very much enjoyed doing this deep dive, though at times it was just like, oh man, I thought I was just going to be watching like cool music videos. Now I'm sad. So yeah, a lot of mixed emotions here. But yes, I am very excited to get into this because I am, as all the kids say, a Britney stan.
So are you trying to tell us that conservatorship law doesn't absolutely slap? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
I'm trying to say, yeah, it is not. It is not that girl. is not giving us what we need. But yeah, so I
understood that reference. Anyway,
there we go. Yeah. So I guess I'll get into this. Andrew, like, what do you know about Britney Spears so we can decide if we want to boot you off of a call?
I mean, you know, pop sensation Britney Spears, troubled teen and young adult Britney Spears, sort of chafing under the guardianship of her father, who I think controls all of her, what I assume have to be at least MC Hammer level finances. So how am I doing so far?
I mean, pretty good as far as that goes. But
I will tell you this. I know nothing about Britney Spears either, but I did watch the documentary. And you at least watched that, Andrew, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. No, we're about in the same place. I will just say this. We are different ages, all of us. Andrew, some Andrews are older than others of us. And I will just say, Britney Spears is approximately 4 to 5 years older than I am. And when I was 12, I think, like 12, like 7th grade, something like that. So it'd be what, like 12, 13? I can't remember. I remember this, her first video coming out, or at least the one that I saw. I think it was her first video. And it was, I couldn't have been a more perfect age for a, you know, 4 years older than me. So she's what, 17, something like that. I was like, this is the most beautiful creature on God's earth at that age. I was like, this is I can't even believe it. Looking back, I'm like, what? Okay. It's so weird to see now. But back at the time, I was like, I am in love with this person. Having said that, I didn't really like her music. So that was the end of it. I kind of forgot she existed after a few weeks. But that's my history with Britney. How about your history, Morgan? Are you actually a big fan? Or are we all being ironic here?
No, I am actually a big fan. Now, I will say that, and I think this was because of this revisiting this early 2000s to mid 2000s culture and how people talked about women explained to me so much about my entire life. And it's, you know,
God,
I mean, kind of joking, but not really, but no wonder I'm deranged, you know, like fully. And yeah, so I was, you know, Britney Spears, she was actually born in Macomb, Mississippi, which is an hour south of where I grew up when I moved to Mississippi, where my grandmother, she settled as well. But, and she grew up in Kentwood, Louisiana. So we kind of had that sort of similar background in that way. But she was actually only 16 years old when Hit Me Baby One More Time came out. And she was doing the thing, which, you know, you forget just how 1990s, the 2000s really were, even, you know, because you think of like, oh, technology.
Well, that was like 1998, right? That video?
Yes. Yeah. But then, you know, she's kind of representative, I think, of like where the 90s are transitioning into that, you know, new millennium that everybody was so hyped up about. But I mean, as far as people being, you know, more progressive on talking about issues like mental health, things like that, absolutely not. It, yeah, it, so you get this kind of discourse, and I mean, it did affect people. I mean, in the way that people talked about mental health, you know, because you have that infamous sort of, you know, I'll talk about more of a background later, but you do have, you know, you see her, and it seems like she is kind of spiraling. And the way people talked about her wasn't, you know, oh, this girl needs help. It was, oh, look at this crazy bitch. You know, it was very much that. And then especially when you look at how extreme the paparazzi was, you don't, I got very much like a lot of Diana vibes from that. Mm. I got a lot of, you know, remembering, you know, growing up, you know, Amy Winehouse, you know, seeing all that unfold, which she was also hounded by the paparazzi and mocked consistently for her issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't see this area of like concern, and you'll even see it in the documentary, you know, some of the paps will be saying things like, oh, I'm worried about you, Brittany. And it's just, you know, girl, are you? But yeah, so Brittany was, you know, growing up, like I, you know, me and my best friend, we would like, you know, learn her dances. We, you know, we were full on into it. Britney Spears was probably the first CD that I had other than probably Will Smith's Men in Black album. So yeah, that was the first CD I had, but Oops, I Did It Again, which came out when I was, you know, around middle school. That was when I was just like, oh my gosh, like, you know, and it is, it's, you know, she's very sweet. She's Southern and she's making it in Hollywood and everybody loves her. And so there is this, you know, ideal sort of that drew me in. And also she genuinely, I still think she does. She loves her fans. She loves to interact with them. She genuinely cares about her fans and she wants to be well liked. I mean, that's, you know, her nature. And as somebody who very much relates to that, you know, that resonated with me. Now I will say, like, as I got into like middle school and high school, I got into my, you know, too edgy for you stage, where I was like, you know, a little emo scene kid. So, you know, publicly I would be like, I don't listen to Britney Spears, but you know, secretly, I was still very much a fan. Like, her perfume, Curious, that came out in 2007,
Andrew,
I believe,
Andrew
was
wears
the
it.
First
That's
perfume
the one
I ever
Andrew
had.
Wears.
Yeah.
I smelled it on him last live show. I was like, that's Curious, Britney Spears, 2000. He bought a pallet of it, still has it.
We are learning so much about Morgan in this episode. This is amazing. I had no idea that Britney Spears had a scent, but
yeah, me neither.
that makes sense. No.
Wildly successful. It's earned. Yeah. This is actually goes into the sort of discourse about, you know, where is her money? So her perfumes have actually sold over $1.5 billion, and those are numbers from, you know, 2013, and she has multiple fragrances under, it's owned by Elizabeth Arden. And the only deal that I could find was that she essentially puts her name on it. You know, she's not like in the lab making this perfume, you know, as iconic as she is, she's not doing that. So, you know, it's basically an agreement where she does, you know, these public appearances to promote it. She's, you know, doing the marketing, her name's on it. And also this was a time when, you know, kind of celebrity fragrances, I think, were kind of a new concept when she did that. So she got $54 million from a first deal. I don't know if they've renegotiated or, you know, what, or if she's gotten any additional money from that, but, you know, so people are pointing to that saying, you know, oh, this is where, you know, where's her money? And it's
Elizabeth,
like, well,
Taylor would disagree with you on that being a newer thing. Didn't Elizabeth Taylor have a perfume for like 1,000 years?
Still does. True.
But I think the biggest takeaway here is opening arguments perfume, right?
Ooh, yeah. It would smell right, like documents and and ink.
And bourbon.
Yeah, I just got to say, like, Lydia and I – yeah, and bourbon. And Lydia and I watched this, and seriously, as you said, Morgan, like, we were just absolutely fucking appalled by how – the media treated her and like how people just the casual sexism of the 90s, 2000s. And I assume still going on now. I don't really watch TV. So, but like, I assume that still goes on now, but it's gotta be, hopefully we've made some progress. Cause like you see stuff they're saying back then, you're just like, oh my God, like, what are you talking about? And by the end of the thing, I was like, A, I don't know how people don't just run over paparazzi every day. Like every day, if that was your life, I would just be like, well, this is not worth it. I'm running you over every day. And either I'll go to prison or you'll stop hounding me or both. And either way, like, how would you deal with that? I don't understand it. And secondly, I was actually amazed with how well Britney handled some of these awful interviews and things back at the time. You know, like it was, she must have, you know, obviously gotten a lot of it because it seems like she kind of got used to it and just some of it seemed to just roll off her, although you never know like how someone's actually feeling. But I was amazed with how well she dealt with that, like casual sexism of those interviews and being blamed for fucking everything. And the, like the difference in how, you know, Justin Timberlake is asked about stuff versus her. It's just, it's staggering to see the double standard. And by the end, we're like, oh, cool. So society drove this poor girl who needed help like insane. And just, and then also blamed her for it every step of the way. Like, it's so ugly.
Yes. And also, I do want to talk about that absolute demon, Justin Randall Timberlake.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Seriously.
Yeah.
I hate him now. I didn't know he sucked this bad.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't follow any pop anything, by the way. I don't catch all the, like, Lydia will explain this stuff to me and I'll forget it. She'll be like, oh, yeah, he had the thing with the blah-bitty blah and did this. And I was like, I already forgot it as soon as you told me. But I'm going to remember now that fuck that guy. I'm going to keep that in my brain and I'll remember why later.
That's all you need to know about that noodle-headed motherfucker. So, like, that he's trash. And he did. He was very good. And I think, in a way, you know, Britney kind of did, you know, acknowledge, like, you know, it's like game respects game. And you talk about how Britney did, you know, take it well when she was, you know, interviewed by the press. And I think that is because she genuinely, like, I mean, I don't know her, and this might be just, you know, me being delusional again, but I think that she genuinely is, you know, a nice person, and she does want to be liked by people. And, you know, also keep in mind, like, she was, again, 16 years old when, yeah, you know, that video for Hit Me Baby One More Time came out. And so she's been in that atmosphere for her entire life.
Yeah, and she's in the South. She's growing up with this as basically a child star. You wonder how much of this she just internalized, you know? Probably a ton of it. But we've talked a bit about Britney and the doc and all that. I think I think the fine listeners would like us to get to the law. Can you set up the legal drama aspect of it a little bit here?
Okay, so this is where I actually wish that and I think, you know, talk about the documentary, this should have been a multiple part thing, because they did not go into how, you know, they said, oh, well, we need to explain the background, but they barely scratched the surface of that. So to give you some context, 2003 to 2004, was really kind of where I think that we need to kind of go back to. So her father, Jamie, was, you know, a full-blown alcoholic. Her aunt had just killed herself. Oh, wow. She is going through, you know, being dragged in the media because of, you know, America thinks that Justin Timberlake is our quarterback boyfriend and she wronged him. And, you know, he's going on Howard Stern, as, you know, people saw, and just being absolutely wild. And so she's also having, she's going through that. She is also ends up in a relationship with a guy named Columbus Short. They're only together for a month because he's still married. And the paparazzi actually caught them together and then asked him about it. And he was just like, yeah, I'm with Britney. And then his marriage ended. And so, you know, that whole relationship had to end. And then she does this, you know, thing where, and I remember as a kid, this was kind of, you know, an iconic moment to me, because I did not know that you could have a marriage that only lasted 55 hours. but she did. She was one of, you know, but that relationship ended because her manager, you know, made her get an annulment. Essentially, she flew in a friend from Kentwood, Louisiana. They were hanging out in Vegas. They're watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre together. And then they're just like, hey, let's go get married. And she doesn't tell anybody. She goes to, they're in Vegas, so they go to one of those, you know, chapels in a lime green limousine, and they get married. And yeah, so then her manager, Larry Rudolph, finds out, and he gets that thing annulled immediately. And it seems like everybody was fine with it, but later on, his name is Jason Alexander, he says, no, I really actually cared about her, and I think she felt the same way. Yeah,
Jason Alexander?
Yeah, Yeah. Oh, holy no, not that guy. Not that guy. Yeah. Not, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That would be too wild. No,
if that were true, I think Andrew would know more about this situation.
Now, how old was she at this time? I mean, she was very young.
She was still very young, so she was in her early 20s at
what
this
year
point.
Is this?
This is 2004, so right after New Year's Eve of 2004,
so she's 22.
When this is going on. Yeah, she's 22 years old. You know, she's going through it, you know, especially with all her family background and all this. And also, I think that she is doing this sort of as, you know, a screw you to her manager, because she is so, you know, managed. And sure. She's just like, yeah, I'm going, this is like a childhood friend, you know, and... Yeah, so I don't know. It's very bizarre. But after the annulment, apparently they all went out to dinner and everybody was like, yeah, they seemed like cool with the annulment. Like, you know, they were just like, oh, that was just a weird thing we did. And Lance Bass was at the dinner and yeah, it was fun. It's like there's so many celebrity cameos in this whole story. But so then you get where I think that, you know, people always say like, well, when did the media turn on Britney? And I'm like, I don't necessarily know that they were ever... you know, with Britney, but, you know, cause you saw the crazy questions she got, but so she meets Kevin Federline, which I'm sure, you know, you remember Kevin Federline very much gives vibes of a guy who is trying to be a rapper from your high school, but can't move out of your hometown. So I think people kind of lost their minds because this is, you know, America's queen. And who is he to, you know, date her? So she also, at the time, he has a pregnant fiance, already has one kid with this woman. They formally separated after she had the kid, but the media speculates like, oh, she's, you know, a homewrecker. And that's kind of a narrative for a little bit. But then everybody kind of starts focusing on this relationship where Britney is going out and she's not as polished and put together. You know, people are saying, oh, maybe Kevin's a gold digger. All this other, you know, is just insane. And so in 2006, her and Kevin, they filed for divorce, irreconcilable differences. And this is really the height of where the paparazzi comes into things. So this is when you get, they're going through these divorce proceedings. And as you saw in the documentary, this is where she shaves her head. And the narrative, just to kind of sidebar into another demon, one of the narratives that I heard growing up was that she did that so that they would not be able to drug test her because they were going in a custody battle with the kids. And so
why would that prevent them from drug testing her?
Because of the drug test of her hair. And I found out where that came from, which I will get into later.
Is that like an Are You a Cop thing, right? Yeah. That she was thinking that they wouldn't be able to detect drugs in her hair if she shaved her head?
Well,
that is an allegation that came out of a defamation lawsuit filed by another absolute demon in her life against the Britney Spears family. So, yeah, I'll get to that.
Having watched this doc and having no knowledge of this beforehand, I am a Dunning-Kruger expert in this situation. So I will tell you, the doc really makes it I don't know. Here's the thing. I remember when this happened vaguely, seeing it on the news, I was like, oh man, she's nuts. Cause I bought into all that narrative, you know, cause I didn't pay attention and the media's crap. So I was like, oh geez, this girl's nuts. And in fairness, she, you know, may have had some postpartum, issues, but like the doc paints it to be like she was tired of getting fucking hounded everywhere at all times and was like, it makes sense to me. The weird thing is watching this doc, how much sense it makes what she did, where it's like, fine, if I shave my head, will you leave me alone? Look, I'm not, you know, Britney anymore. I'm not like beautiful. I'm not, you know, like that makes sense to me. And I don't, that drug test thing makes absolutely no sense. But I guess if she was just really wrong about how drug tests work,
no,
I don't know.
That's not true. So that is something that somebody alleged. Right. And so that did become part of the
like an urban
discourse.
Legend of it.
Yeah. And that did become, I think, part of the discourse is, you know, again, look at this crazy bitch. She's out here doing coke. You know, she's going out partying. She's one of these party girls. And she even explains as she's doing it. And she goes to the hair salon and she asks them, shave my head. And the hairdresser refuses.
Oh, yeah, they wouldn't do it.
Which, you know, I guess in that situation would kind of make sense.
I know. That
I
also makes sense
to
me. I was like, I'm not shaving Britney Spears'. I'm sorry. Find another person to do this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an I would like to be excluded from this narrative situation. But yeah. Nowadays, that's the thing. You know, she, you know, Amber Rose has a shaved head. Halsey has a shaved head. But nobody is saying, oh, look at these crazy women.
Well, a different time. Yeah, no, that's definitely a different time.
So, yeah, she does that. And then she does, they mentioned this in the documentary, the paparazzi will not leave her alone. She's going through a situation where Kevin Federline will not let her see her kids. And she, you know, drives to a gas station. She's being hounded by the paparazzi. It is like, if you look at these old TMZ clips, it is insane, like how close they are. They will start fighting with each other outside of the cars. It's to get the shot. It is, they'll mess up each other's cameras. It was bonkers, truly insane. Like, yeah, just shut that whole thing down. And I think that it has gotten better for, you know, different reasons. One of them, I think, is also social media. So now it's like, you don't really need the paparazzi as much as you did. You can just, right. You know, post to Instagram.
By the end of it, that was my hope. I was like, I hope Instagram just put these people out of business, these fucking vultures. Like, I hope that's true. I have no idea. Also, COVID. Nobody's hopefully grouping around and getting photos of somebody. Hopefully that's done. Can we be done with that?
There's still some, but they did, this is, of course, after, you know, all this happened, but they have passed, you know, certain laws. Like, you can't have a drone where you're taking photos of, you know, somebody's house and trying to get, you know, these photos of, you know, if you have a reasonable expectation of privacy somewhere, you can't, you know, be up in their grill. There's stronger harassment, you know, protections and things like that. And I think a lot of this was passed because of issues like Britney, and then seeing where that can lead, because this is also the time of, you know, us seeing Anna Nicole Smith's demise. We're also seeing the same thing happen with the Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton issue. And then this also, she became associated with Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan. And there's actually a famous picture in 2006. The New York Post runs this infamous photo. It's Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, and Britney Spears in a car together. And Paris and Britney were out partying together. And Lindsay Lohan, she was actually in a feud with Paris Hilton at the time. But she just comes running and jumps in the car with them. And Paris is just like, okay, you're in my two-seater BMW. This is awkward. There's paparazzi all around, so I'm just going to roll with it. And they get this shot, and it's on the cover of a New York Post. And stamped across that cover, it says, The Bimbo Summit.
Ugh, cool.
So she gets into this situation where she is seen hanging out with Paris Hilton. And Paris Hilton is, you know, God bless her, all the DUIs. But, which, I mean, she also had her own issues as well. And she's been more talking about that and things like that. But yeah, it is interesting once you start diving into this. There's always a Paris Hilton connection. All roads lead to Paris, and that's hot. But she has this incident where, so in 2007, Kevin's refusing to let Britney see the kids. You know, October 2007, a court ruling did grant Kevin Federline sole physical custody, and then legal custody was going to be decided at a later hearing. Then on January 3rd, 2008, police are called to Britney's home after she reportedly refused to give up custody of her kids to Federline. And she locks herself in a room with her youngest son, Jaden. And the police are called. She's taken from her home on a stretcher. Paparazzi's all around her. There's even shots of her as she's leaving and she's strapped to a gurney and she's just flipping them off, which I get completely. So then a family court judge suspends her visitation rights in January 2008. She also gets sent again to the psychiatric hospital on January 31st. And what's very weird about this, and I'll get into the law on this. So this is called a 5150 hold. So it comes from Section 5150 of the California Welfare and Institutions Code. Yeah, so
classic,
this allows
classic Van Halen album. But anyway, keep going.
Huh. Yeah, it is. When I was going through the research, yeah, it has become part of, you know, popular culture, you know, just refer to, oh, it's a 5150. So, but yeah, that's where it comes from. It is Section 5150 of the Welfare and Institutions Code of California. So this allows a person with what they call a mental challenge to be involuntarily detained for 72 hours in a psychiatric hospital. So a psychiatric hospital, they can release you. You know, say they think you only need to be kept overnight. And then they think, okay, they're fine. They just, you know, freaked out a little bit. But, you know, we adjusted some meds and they seem to be chill, so they can go. But they can hold them for 72 hours. And then there's another procedure that they can go with to get them to hold you for another 14 days, but that's another procedure. So the second major psychiatric hold, this 5150 that happened on January 31st, it's interesting that a lot of the information about what happened as it was unfolding all seems to come from TMZ. So, and I know TMZ is not a paragon of journalistic ethics. I think that they are absolute vultures. But, yeah, they are the ones who do seem to have this sort of information about how they, and they do have sources like well within, you know, LAPD, within the sheriff's office. That's how they, I believe that they are first to report on any celebrity death, to the point where, you know, it's, they should let the family know at least, but, you know, that's how TMZ rolls. So, they apparently had coordinated to get to call the cops to get her. They had been planning this for days that they would get her under a 5150 hold, which is kind of strange to me because it seems to be a situation where somebody is in immediate danger and not a thing that you just, you know, plan like, right, you know, right. Not to compare it to planning a vacation, but it's very odd, but I think that the reason they did this was so Jamie Spears, he does file for a conservatorship. And
I want to hit that, but is there an immediacy requirement on the 5150 hold, or is it just like the standard danger to self and others?
It's a standard danger to self and others, but I would think that if somebody was a danger to self and others, that's not something you wait
right.
for a few days to right. get your affairs in order, even though I do understand it is somebody like Britney Spears. And I imagine because of how quickly he went about petitioning for his conservatorship, that this was in the hopper, basically. And they were just trying to coordinate all this together, which to me seems like I understand the reasoning, but it does feel gross.
Yeah.
The fact yeah. that you are planning to have her taken in by the police to a hospital, and you, meanwhile, you've got this petition waiting to file for conservatorship, and now, you're just planning all this around that.
During those hearings, do you have the right to be represented by counsel, or is it just a psychiatric interview where you don't have that right?
So you do have a right to be represented, and they do mention this in the documentary. Britney Spears actually goes to an attorney. His name is, let's see, I think it's, I almost said Andrew Seidel. I know that's not right.
Oh, that would be like fantastic.
It's Michael Richards, but not that Michael Richards.
No, it was Mark Garagos, wasn't it?
Right, that was a funny joke, but never mind. Okay, fine. I'll put in a laugh track after the fact.
That was you were not going to get laughs after the idea that Britney Spears was represented by Andrew Seidel. That's so great.
I would have believed that. I mean, he's good looking enough, Hollywood lawyer, you know.
Oh man, could you imagine the Andrew Seidel and Britney Spears? Some beautiful kids.
That's a dream couple. I'm shipping it.
Does representing her mean something different in your parlance? Is that what the kids call it these days, Andrew?
It's Hollywood.
There you go. Anyway, sorry, we stepped on your lines while we were reminiscing about Andrew Seidel, who I sincerely hope doesn't listen to this episode.
I hope he does, because he needs to know.
He does need to know. That's fair.
But so she does go to this other, and he's interviewed in this documentary, and he thinks so. Britney is under
but it's
the
not,
under.
It's not Mark Garagos, though.
No, it is not. So she is being what this is a general probate conservatorship. So these are typically for elderly adults who can't take care of themselves and who don't really fall into the other two kinds.
Yeah.
So instances of these are, you may recall, Casey Kasem. There was a conservatorship over that, and there was, you know, a lot of tension with that, to the point where, you know, they were trying to figure out, even after he died, you know, where is he going to be buried? Who's going to make the funeral arrangements? There was so much conflict within that family. There was also one that was done for Zsa Zsa Gabor later on in her life. Those are really the two celebrities I can find that are most comparable. But again, these are people who were at the end of their lives. They couldn't take care of themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they were on the decline. But also, Amanda Bynes actually got a temporary conservatorship over her. But again, that was a temporary one. It was specifically filed as a temporary one while she went and got psychiatric care.
This was mine and Lydia's biggest question, because she's under this, like, seemingly infinite conservatorship. And Lydia was like, okay, obviously she's got to Google this once we're watching it, you know. And the couple types of conservatorships you're mentioning – one seemed like, oh, mental health emergency, it's temporary, like it only lasts a year and you have to renew it. That seems like what she should be under. But she, and let me know if we have this wrong, she's under the one that, like you say, it's like for, you know, elderly people that toward the end of their life, where it's like, all right, you know, they can't manage their stuff anymore, they can't manage their finances. How, why in the world is she under that kind and not the other kind?
So what you're referring to is an LPS conservatorship. So that stands for, you know, the, it's just abbreviation for the guys that the, you know, white men who came up with the law. But so it's just referred to as an LPS. So these are for people who can't take care of themselves and the situation is severe to the point where they cannot feed or clothe themselves.
Yeah.
It is a intense. So yes, that is why. And because they are so restrictive, because these people have to have everything cared for them. So that is why they are more temporary. They last 30 days. And then, like you said, they can be renewed for a year. And then after that, you have to renew for this conservatorship every single year. So yes, it is. I think that the purpose of the conservatorship, so this all this conservatorship law comes from California Probate Code, Section 1800. And so 1800.3 allows for conservatorships to be established. But the court shall not establish a conservator of a person or an estate unless there is an express finding that granting the conservatorship is the least restrictive alternative. So,
yeah, which leaves me a little puzzled.
Yes. So then we get to Section 1801. So this is for the, this is for general conservatorships. This is for people who cannot take care of themselves, developmentally disabled adults, as we discussed, or a conservator of the estate may be appointed for a person who is substantially unable to manage his or her own financial resources or resist fraud or undue influence, except as provided for that person as described in, you know, this other section. So where, you know, they do have, you have to have basically a pretty high bar of evidence, is my understanding, because it is restricting somebody's life and their affairs and the most personal parts of their affairs, you know, their, your finances and your ability to go out in the world and be a person. So, and also substantial inability, they say, isolated incidents of, you know, somebody being negligent with their finances, like, oh, I accidentally went to the Gucci store and went a little nuts, you know, that's not enough to say, okay, we're going to establish a conservatorship. Also, another point is this attorney who's interviewed in the documentary does say Brittany acknowledged that she had no chance of fighting the conservatorship and acknowledged, I think, that she needed help because she was looking, I think, for help and she was crying for help in a certain way. But so I think she acknowledged that. And this lawyer she wanted to hire said, she just told me she did not want her father to be the conservator and made that very clear. She wanted somebody, which I think that this actually shows a lot of awareness on her part in, you know, from the beginning, is that she wanted somebody who was professional and independent, like a third party who has done this kind of work before.
Yeah.
And
well,
one
of the things that this happens whenever you have a guardianship, a conservatorship, a trusteeship. But the conservator is allowed to take a salary from the estate. Do we know if her father is taking a salary from the estate, in addition to having control over the assets? And obviously that can, you know, that can lead to conflicts of interest and that sort of thing.
Well, by but, now, the father is not the conservator, right? But he was initially?
No. So here's what happens. So he gets this temporary general conservatorship established, and then later on it does become permanent. And who is in charge is he is granted conservatorship over her person. So this means he is in charge of her medical care, you know, her management.
Right. Well, if I remember from the doc, though, I think he had one where it was both, right? And then eventually he was not allowed to be conservator over her finances and is just conservator over her person. Is that right?
Not quite. Not quite. So he also was named a conservator over her finances, which I thought was very strange. And I understand that there is this sort of preference where he's her father, he's close to her, he's going to be somebody who has, you know, her best interests at heart. He's going to know what she wants because of the nature of their relationship. But as, you know, they talk about in the documentary, Jamie wasn't really in her life initially before. And also to go to your question, Andrew, I don't know that his motive is financial, because if you can see where he's been taking a salary and he's taking about, you know, $100,000, but out in Los Angeles, that's nothing.
Oh, yeah.
That's nothing. And then he also, so he does have, he did have a co-conservator, which was Andrew Wallet, which I thought that was the funniest name for the attorney. Very unfortunate. But I don't think Andrew Wallet was over here stealing money, which is, you know, what a lot of Free Britney people, which,
right,
you know, I'm very supportive of them. And I think that they do come from a good place. But the things that they are saying is, you know, kind of unsubstantiated. And I do get that they do have these questions about where is her money? Because if you look at her lifetime earnings, it's in the like $600 million. And then her estate right now is $48 million. But when Andrew Wallet came into the picture and they did the conservatorship, they were actually able to expand her estate, which was about $28 million when they took it over. And now it's doubled. So I don't know where they are stealing money from, and I don't understand that allegation.
That was why I teed up that question, having sort of seen that as one of the, you know, standard kind of Free Britney allegations. So so it's your evaluation that under the financial conservatorship, at least, it looks like her assets are being, you know, sensibly managed
in a way. But here's the thing with that. So Andrew Wallet in 2019, he stepped down.
Keep saying that name, Andrew Wallet.
Yeah. It's a fun name, but he stepped down. He didn't say why. And this is actually shortly after Britney announces that she is canceling her Vegas residency, and she's not going to do, she was supposed to announce that she was going to do another Vegas residency, but she ended up canceling that. And another thing that Andrew Wallet did ask for two raises. And I think a lot of people point to that and they say, oh, there it is. You know, he's the bad guy. And he asked for a raise where he's saying, and he does use very unfortunate language here, where he says the conservatorship should be treated as a hybrid business model.
Yeah.
And that she is a high-functioning conservatee, and because of the nature of her work, and he's, you know, he's managing all of her assets here, and he's making these deals. So he's saying, basically, I'm working my ass off over here. Can I at least, like, get compensated for that? The fact that this isn't just some, you know, old lady's conservatorship. I'm over here doing deals in Vegas.
It was pretty amazing to hear the term high functioning conservatorship or whatever.
That, like, again,
what is going on there? Yeah. We've got somebody who's working, who's making millions of dollars, doing shows, doing all this stuff. How in the world is she under conservatorship that's for like old dying people? I don't understand it.
Yes. And the thing about the old dying people is the judge pointed to undue influence, which I'll get to in a second here about what person represented most of that undue influence. So Andrew Wallet steps down after that. He doesn't say why, but then there's this podcast called Britney's Graham, which they talk about in the documentary. And this is a podcast where
no one listens to podcasts. So it's,
you'll feel. Yeah, I don't know why we didn't think of this, but what we should have done was done a podcast where all we do is talk about Britney's Instagram.
Yeah. million listeners instantly.
Yeah. It, crazy. So they get a call in 2019. This is after Andrew Wallet steps down. And this is after also it's revealed Britney did go to a psychiatric facility in March of 2019. But it seems to be an issue of where she was just getting adjusted to some new medications. And I think that they just, in according to her and everybody that was involved, this was voluntary. Which, you know, that happens. You know, sometimes you do want to be in a safe place monitored by physicians, especially if you're doing a substantial change in your meds. That makes sense to me. But this person who calls, he calls into this podcast, leaves a voicemail, and he claims that he's a paralegal. And he says, the reason Andrew Wallet resigned was because he was uncomfortable with all this admitting her to a psychiatric hospital. He felt uncomfortable about that. And also she was sent there against her will. And actually she went in January. And what her dad did was he was telling her, you need to take this medicine that I'm giving you or else I'm going to cancel your Vegas residency and take this away from you. And she refused to take the meds. And so he just had her committed, basically thrown into a psychiatric hospital and then canceled her residency. And that was why. Which Britney's reasoning for canceling the residency was her father was going through health issues. And her father also claims that that is why he did step down from being conservator of her person in 2019. So Jamie is no longer conservator of her person. But if you look at other things going on at the time, Jamie actually got into a physical altercation with one of Britney's teenage sons. And to the point where there was a restraining order filed. And so, and then it was shortly after that he stepped down as conservator of a person. And now she has a woman, Jody Montgomery, who is appointed as temporary conservator of her person. And the judge has elected to go ahead and extend that in its current form. So that will last until at least September of 2021. But from all things that I've seen, Britney seems to like Jody. Jody's actually very experienced with being a conservator. She coordinates all of her medical care. She is talking with her doctors. She's the one on the ground, understanding what Britney needs, understanding what she wants. And according to her lawyer, Sam Ingram, which was a court-appointed attorney. So this other attorney she talked to, the judge said, no, I don't think she's competent to appoint an attorney. I'm going to appoint one for her. So this is where Sam Ingram comes in, which I have very weird feelings about Sam because he now is starting to make the arguments in these hearings which were scheduled status hearings. But just now he's starting to make these arguments that Jamie does not need to have anything to do with her conservatorship. And it's like, okay, well, where were you this whole time? You know, this has been going on for 12 years. This was established in, 2008. So it's kind of weird that all of a sudden he's just kind of woken up and been like, oh, get Jamie out of there. And just some background on Jamie, he did have struggles with alcoholism, not saying that that makes him a bad person or anything. But he also has filed for bankruptcy in the past. Also, he's a dude from Kentwood, Louisiana. He is not qualified, I feel, to manage multi-million-dollar
sexism
state.
More of the sexism in this thing, doesn't it feel like it? I mean, okay, Britney has her problems, obviously, to a certain degree. And then the court's like, yeah, this woman has some problems. Let's have an alcoholic deadbeat, multiple bankruptcy, be in charge of her whole life. You're like, what? How does that work? It just feels really unfair to me. Hashtag free Britney!
I mean, yeah, exactly. And he was working with somebody who was really shady at the time. She apparently is very highly litigious. She has actually sued two separate Britney fans for making allegations that, Britney's social media is being managed and she's not really writing these Instagram posts. But she runs a weird Christian center for women who are in abusive situations. And then her name's Lou Taylor. And I can't believe the documentary didn't talk about her because Courtney Love has come out and said, oh yeah, I know about this Lou Taylor woman. She tried to get a conservatorship over me and was trying to make plans with people. And then Lindsay Lohan has also said, indicated the same thing. At least I know, I think her father has. I think Lindsay Lohan has, pretty much subtly, supported that's what happened. But yeah, so there's this very weird thing going on with that and the whole appointing him.
I may have lost the thread on the guy who called up the podcast and left the voicemail. Was that just total nonsense or?
Well, we don't know because he makes this allegation, and that's really what kicks off the hashtag Free Britney thing on TikTok and Instagram. And then these people start going through her Instagram, and it kind of gets to the point where it's a little bit QAnon-esque for me. Where people are coming through her Instagram saying, oh, she used a pink flower emoji. That means that, you know, she never would use that emoji. She would, you know, she's being held hostage against her will.
Yeah. And that part kind of seems like all crap. I don't really care about that part, the QAnon aspect of it.
Yes. And it's almost kind of the same sort of paternalism, you know, that you mentioned, Thomas, where people in her life have felt the need of being like, oh, this woman can't surely make her own choices and decide who wants to run her conservatorship or, you know, what degree of control she feels like she would like to take back over. There is this thing where it seems like these fans almost are kind of engaging in similar behavior where, you know, it's poor Britney. We got to go, you know, decode all of her messages and find, you know, where she's writing secret messages on a hat or she wore a yellow top. And yesterday somebody commented, if you need help, wear a yellow top. And it's Britney Spears. She gets thousands of Instagram comments. I don't think she's over there coming through. You know, it could be a coincidence. It could not be. And then there's other people saying, oh, well, she's looking more unhinged to these Instagram posts because it's a conspiracy by the conservatorship to make it look like she's crazy and does need a conservatorship. And the thing is, Jamie has not helped this situation because he has written... Britney's lawyer has pointed this out where he has said things where Jamie has gone through and he has used their sealing procedure to get all of Britney's records sealed. So a lot of this, I genuinely can't evaluate because so many of her records are sealed and there's so much information we just don't know. And things that I think should be sealed, such as her psychiatric history, you know, things like that, that's nobody's business. And I can understand that impulse even in the beginning where, you know, the media was speculating on every single thing about her and hounding her down. So I can understand that, but I think that the discourse has changed and people genuinely are concerned at this point, you know, what is going on? So him going through and stealing these records to the degree that he has is only making it look suspicious and like he's up to something, but... Under California Probate Code Section 1850, there are reviews of a conservatorship. So there is an investigator who actually will interview Britney, look over the finances, determine if it's still in the best interests, and then make a report to the court. And Jamie has to record every nickel he spends.
And I think you said that the latest personal conservatorship that the review comes up in September. Is that right?
That's going to be when it expires or when that temporary conservatorship will expire. And I think that she will, you know, the judge will decide whether, you know, they want to extend that or, you know, whether, you know, review that and see what parameters and what conditions she can be given. Like, for instance, right now, Britney Spears cannot drive. And she can't. Also, her dad did say something very weird about where... You know, sometimes she has her cell phone, sometimes she doesn't. And to me, that was a little strange. I'm just like, okay, well, what are the rules here? And then also Andrew Wallet was kind of involved because of the second petition he made to get a raise for himself. He said that he became entangled in the personal conservatorship, which I thought was inappropriate because you have only been appointed as co-conservator of the estate. You have no business in the personal conservatorship. I don't care what Jamie is asking you to do. That's inappropriate. You can't just ask for more money because you're taking it upon yourself to do jobs that the court does not even have you doing. But so Jamie is removed from a personal conservatorship for now, but he is still on the estate one. So again, Section 1850, you have to submit detailed accounts of everything spent, but Andrew Wallet is out of the picture now. And I think he probably was the one who was responsible for the finances, you know what I mean? Because as we've discussed, you know, he's a dude who's from, you know, not to say people from Kentwood, Louisiana can't do anything, but he's like a country dude from Kentwood. You know, he doesn't have the experience of managing millions and millions of dollars. And Andrew Wallet actually did use this as an excuse for why the conservatorship should stay in place, whether it's valid or not. But he said, look, because of the conservatorship, we were able to get her deals like this Vegas residency. Because there could have been an issue where this casino would have said, well, I don't know, Brittany's, you know, been in the news lately. I don't know that she's stable enough to do this.
It sounds like his argument has merit in two ways there, right? Like, first, the argument to increase his compensation, he's right that your typical conservatorship does not involve, you know, negotiating multi-million dollar casino residencies, right? Like, it really is sort of a lot more active work than the typical case. And it also seems like he's got a case that the conservatorship has, maximized and preserved the assets, right? That they've, you know, they've doubled the estate. Very few conservators, I think, would meet that standard.
Yeah, I agree. And he did step down, and there was that mysterious voicemail where this person, was claiming to be a paralegal, but the podcast claims,
By the way, anybody, just so folks know, anybody can be a paralegal, right? Like, that's not a thing. Anyway, keep going.
Well, no, it's just that they claim to be specifically a paralegal who had access to information that other people didn't.
I just folks will sometimes, you know, write into the show or whatever. Like, you can get certifications, but
wait,
like,
am I a paralegal?
Yeah, like I could absolutely call you my paralegal.
I'll gladly be your paralegal.
There you go.
I assume this means I parachute in when you need help.
There we go. Yeah. Now I think you're thinking of the Taint Team, but
yeah, I'm in the van. Let's go.
We're in the van with Paris.
Yeah, who's driving?
Run over those paparazzi. Let's go.
So we can all agree paparazzi are evil.
Yes. And the podcast claims that they did verify this paralegal, but I don't know what their standards were for vetting. Again, I don't know these women. I don't know their lives, but the New York Times and the LA Times both have said we haven't been able to verify it. So I don't know if it's a situation where they tried to and maybe they just didn't want to get him in trouble, you know, because he's over there ostensibly revealing personal client information to a podcast. So there's problems there.
Yeah. So I will fire you as my paralegal if you do that,
Thomas. In the waning minutes of this podcast, I want to know what your impressions are as someone who has looked into this with a law background, Morgan. So I get that, like, on one hand, if you make kind of the other side's argument for this conservatorship, you know, there's the Free Britney, which I'm team Free Britney. And then there's the other side which might say, okay, look, she has a troubled history. She allowed a guru to, like, come into her life and maybe take advantage of her and all that kind of stuff. And, like, fair enough. Okay, there could be an argument that, like, she is maybe unable to prevent herself from being taken in by con men or something, you know, whatever it might be. And so, therefore, maybe something like this is warranted. But even under the worst facts, and maybe we don't have access to, obviously, her full medical history and all that stuff that would be private, but even under, like, the worst facts, does it make sense to be in a permanent conservatorship? And for times when she's been like, I just don't want it to be my dad, and then they're like, sorry, it's your dad. You know, I know that's kind of not the case now, but stuff like that. And also the idea that she's performing, making millions of dollars, and they show this scene where she has this big Vegas reveal, and she's like, fuck it, I'm not doing it, because I don't. She's almost protesting. Like, all those signs where she's expressing what she wants, she's clearly competent enough to, like, work and do all this stuff. Does it seem appropriate at all that she's in this setup? What's the argument there? What do you think?
So, to answer that, I do want to say that I think a big part of why this conservatorship was formed in the first place was to get her away from this Sam Lufty. I'm not going to go all into him because for time's sake, but this man, he has a history of trying to get himself into the inner circle of celebrities, especially when they do seem to be going through a difficult time. He's been associated with Courtney Love. He's been associated with trying to get in with Lindsay Lohan, Amanda Bynes, people like that. So even I've heard rumors of him trying to get in with Paris Jackson, Michael Jackson's daughter. He is gross. And when they were getting the restraining order against him, Britney Spears' mom testified things like he was drugging her with pills. He was abusing her. He would do this thing where, and I wish they would have gone into this in the documentary, just how, and this I believe was the undue influence that they were referring to in the beginning. He would do things where he would hide her dog, and then Britney would be devastated because, you know, she loves her dog. And then he would appear with the dog and say, "Oh, I found him," to make himself look like he was this great savior. And then he would throw away her cell phone chargers, disable her car. And then when Britney would say things like, "What's going on, my stuff?" he would just say, "Oh, you're crazy." He would say things like, "You don't deserve to be a mom. You don't deserve your children. You're just a whore." Horrible things. And so, yeah, this man needed, I think the situation was a conservatorship could go in and get a restraining order against Sam Lufty on her behalf, because she was in no state to do that. And he was so ingrained in her life. He would even brag to Britney's mom. This is all according to Lynn, and she testified to this in court, that he would say, "Oh, I own everybody around Britney, her security. I own her lawyers. I own everyone. Right. And so I think initially there was a reason, but
yeah, like fair enough. But like all of that, wouldn't all of that be evidence the other way? Like if you know, so maybe you need to set up a temporary conservatorship to get rid of this fucking barnacle that, you know, whatever, this tapeworm that's infested her, and that guy needs to be thrown into the sun. I get it. But then if you are trying to make a case for Britney getting out of the conservatorship, it seems to me that all that stuff is very good evidence that she could manage her own stuff if she's not being full-on manipulated by another person, right? Like if somebody could come in and just be like, "Hey, give me your money." She's like, "Oh, yeah, sure, whatever." That would be like, okay, well, she can't handle, you know, maybe she can't handle herself. But if it's like, well, he went in, he drugged her, he stole her dog, he did all this stuff, you're like, yeah, well, once you get rid of that guy, maybe she is able to make decisions on her own.
Yes. And I think that's part of, again, I don't have really a lot of regard for Jamie just because it is sketchy that he just popped into her life and they seem to have a very, very tense relationship, which of course I'm sure that situation has not been held by the fact that he's the guy saying, "You can't use your phone, you can't use your car, you can't go places." I would absolutely hate that person, especially if I felt like I deserved more freedoms. But yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think what needs to be done is what Britney wanted all along. So a conservatee can always petition the court to end the conservatorship, but there's no evidence that she has ever done that. So I think what she is fine with is that I think that she does want, you know, she acknowledges that, you know, I have bajillions of dollars. I'm fine with somebody managing that, but I just want somebody who knows what they're doing and who isn't this close to the situation. You never want a family member involved in business. I feel like that's when, unless it's Kris Jenner. I think Kris Jenner does a great job at whatever it is she does. But like, exception of Kris Jenner with the Kardashians, I think that he needs to be away from the situation. And I think that it's really his motive is the control, which you can read a lot into that. And again, I don't have access to the files. I don't know her or what's going on in her personal life, but you can read a lot of things into why that motive might be there. It may be because he's scared that somebody like Sam Lufty is going to come in. But I absolutely feel like, you know, she's performing, she's doing all these things. I feel like she should be in an area where she is able to transition out of this conservatorship. And she's able to do things like drive her car, go places without being monitored constantly. And if she wants somebody to manage her assets, then she should be allowed to change that over to a trust, which that might be her lawyer's strategy to end the conservatorship, because I feel he probably feels like if Jamie is in the way, is still there, because right now he is still co-conservator. But what happened was Britney's choice for to be conservator of her estate was also appointed as a co-conservator. The judge said, you know, I'm not going to remove Jamie right now, but that Brittany can certainly make the motion to do so in the future. And so there is somebody with, you know, she now has a professional conservator over her person, and she has a professional co-conservator along with her father over her estate. And there will be another hearing on March 17th, and there will be another one in April to address the status of that and do, you know, these court reportings on what would be the best thing for her. Because the idea is that you do whatever's best for the conservatee. But again, with the language of, oh, she's a high-functioning conservatee, what is that? That does not make any sense. She needs to be, I think she needs to be allowed out of a personal conservatorship. And I don't understand why they can't just transfer her out of this financial conservatorship if she agrees to do something like, hey, I'm going to have a trust account. And when you have a trust account, you have somebody that is a fiduciary duty. They have to report to not just a court, but to regulatory authorities. They have, you know, certain obligations that they do have to meet. And I feel like that a bank would have to meet rather than, you know, just some dude.
Yeah. So that's the next step is mid-March. There is going to be a hearing on the financial conservatorship, and Brittany will be able to be represented by counsel at that.
Yes. So her lawyer, Sam, will be representing her, and he's really come out for Brittany in these, especially in these later hearings, which again, I'm kind of like, well, Sam, where were you? You know, so I have complicated feelings, but I'm just, you know, I'm glad you're here now. But Sam Ingram has also said that Brittany is actually refusing to perform until her father is removed. So that is why she is not doing any performances. And again, Thomas, as you mentioned, she just kind of said, fuck y'all, I'm not going to perform, do y'all's little, this little residency anymore, as long as I'm being managed and controlled by him.
Well, so, and also COVID, yeah. Right? I mean,
yeah, also COVID. Yeah, that's true as well. But yeah, Sam has said that she will not perform unless her father is removed. And what she does after that, I think should be, you know, left up to her completely. If Brittany, I just want what's best for her and what Brittany wants. And it is hard because Brittany has not spoken a lot about the conservatorship and her thoughts about it. Her boyfriend has certainly expressed thoughts that he does not like Jamie and thinks that he's very controlling and trying to micromanage things. And he thinks he's, you know, an asshole. But yeah, so I do think that she does. Yeah, I'm on the free Brittany side altogether. But I think we also have to keep in mind that we don't truly know what we don't know, because there are sealed records. There are things like that. And we also don't really kind of know what Brittany wants. And Sam has said in court that Brittany is trying to, quote, regain some measure of personal autonomy and welcomes the informed support of her many fans. So I think that word choice of informed is very meaningful there, because I think he is saying, yeah, there are some people who are taking it crazy far and acting as if, you know, she's being held in Abu Ghraib or something, which, I mean, her situation is bad. I certainly don't envy it. It is, you know, she should be allowed to, you know, go out and go get lunch with Paris Hilton as she, you know, whenever she wants, which she does from time to time. But she shouldn't have to be micromanaged like that. I feel like she's an adult. If she's an adult enough, like you said, Thomas, to go and do a multi-million-dollar Vegas residency, then surely she can live her own life. And she's past that stage where, and the restraining order against Sam Lufty, it was renewed for another 5 years in 2019. This guy is a monster. I feel like right now she has people that, you know, will probably ensure that somebody like him does not get into her again, get their claws into her again. And I feel like also, you know, she's grown past that stage.
5 years seems like a long time for a restraining order. So that seems like you would have had to have demonstrated a pretty high level of malevolence to get that. I mean, I think that, am I wrong on that as an impression?
Yeah. No, you are not wrong on that at all. That is, Sam Lufty truly is a demon. I know we're all atheists here and we're, but genuinely, if there is anybody who is from hell, it is that man. He is a monster. Like, there is never, and it's kind of hard to track down where exactly he came from.
Yeah, the doc really doesn't go into that level of detail that you did, and it should. You know, like you said, this should have been a multi, somebody, I hope somebody's working on like a multi-part thing that really goes into all of this. And I will say, you know, we're out of time, but like my favorite person in this whole documentary was her like friend who was her kind of manager for a while that they interviewed. That's just like, Felicia. She just seems like she genuinely loves Britney and is like, yeah, I'm sad that, you know, I'm not around her anymore, but this was we have so many great times and she has all these memories. She seemed like the one like genuinely good person that I wish was like still around Britney somehow.
Oh, but I did too.
Sweet. And she's, we loved her.
Felicia is amazing. And yeah, she's from Kentwood. And again, it's an example of, you can't really tell, you know, I mean, I don't think Jamie should be involved in conservatorship at all, but Felicia was actually a very good manager. I mean, Britney's had an incredible career. And yeah. She also, Felicia went on to manage the Jonas Brothers. Like, she's not.
Oh, really?
Yes. She, after the falling out, you know, as they explained in the documentary between her and, you know, Britney's dad, which, you know, Felicia, I don't even think has the full picture on why that happened, like why she was kind of cut out. I don't know if that had anything to do with Sam or, you know, trying to gain more influence and getting people out of her life that really cared about her. But yeah, like I am absolutely on the whole Free Britney thing. And I think we should let Britney do what she wants. I mean, if she wants her money in a trust, or, you know, she should be able to do that. I don't think it should be a conservatorship situation. Again, like as I've explained, this seems to be the undue influence thing is so vague. And I think the California probate code needs a rehaul, honestly, after all this, because that, like, what does that mean? And it's kind of, you know, up to the court to decide what that means. There's no, like, I've tried to find a case and there's really no case that's similar to Britney's. So, yeah. You know, I'm hoping that there can be some changes here.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, now that you've been given a full briefing, what do you make of this? What do you think?
It looks like so Morgan, thank you so much for really just comprehensive research on that. It looks like, as with a lot of these stories that we do, that there is a layer of complexity sort of below, you know, the reported surface. I have to say, like, I keep coming back to the fact that, that under the conservatorship, they have, doubled the estate. Now look, like, again, that doesn't typically trump autonomy arguments, right? Like, you know, I made the MC Hammer joke, right?
If you put me in control of a multi-million-dollar estate right now, regardless of the sanity, quote unquote, of the person who owns it, I feel like I could probably do pretty well with it. It wouldn't be, but, and it wouldn't say anything about like whether or not that person should be under my control.
No. That's right. It does not answer the. It does not answer the threshold question, right? Which is a conservatorship appropriate? Mm-hmm. But it does speak to the, right? Like what you typically look for in these kinds of situations, which is someone being taken advantage of, or, let me put it in this context. You don't have to try as a conservator or trustee. You don't have to try in order to wind up like vastly diminishing the assets of an estate, right? Like that is, I see this in civil cases, right? When, you know, you have, a trustee appointed in bankruptcy, or it's typically by a bankruptcy court, because the company is otherwise ungovernable. And basically what that's doing is, you know, you are paying somebody like me at my hourly rates to come in and run the company. And that will deplete a company's assets very, very quickly. So, you know, it maybe I'm wrong to focus on the financial portion, but that's what struck me sort of, if you're making, cause you two are both team, you know, Thomas is team Free Britney and, is going on Instagram tomorrow. Morgan is team Free Britney with, you know, some reservations. And if you want an argument for the other side, you know, I don't want to be team hashtag imprison Britney or whatever. But that would be my argument for the other side.
All right. Well, Morgan, thanks for the deepest of deep dives. Almost 70 minutes flew by in 2 minutes. So There's a lot to cover.
Yeah, I could talk about this for hours because, yeah, there is that complexity to it. But also, yeah, I am on very much the Free Britney and just, but also making sure we respect what she actually wants for her life.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's, and, yeah, and those were
the
key
all
things,
there
like,
for that.
The fact that, you know, she wanted her dad to not be it. And they're like, you know, it'd be great for this, your dad. You're like, what? Come on. It's at a minimum, that seems weird. But oh, well. Find Morgan and I on our new Free Britney podcast with special guest Andrew Torres if he comes around.
With a million subscribers. This is the last
The
Thomas
new juggernaut of the of our little podcast.
We'll find another celebrity to stalk and we'll discuss their Instagram.
All right. I want in on the graft. Come on, please.
All right. Thanks, Morgan. And thanks, listeners or patrons, I suppose, at this point. And hope you enjoyed this bonus Free Britney episode.